Well, the month of February is National Heart Month. How is the, or what is the best way for you to stay heart healthy? For that, we are joined by Dr. Rachel Kiever of the Durham Orange County Medical Society. She's the Chief Medical Officer for Carolina Complete Health Network in Durham. She serves on the Board of Directors of the NC Medical Society. She's a Fellow of the American College of Cardiology and an adult cardiologist here in our area. Dr. Kiever, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This conversation presented by the Durham Orange County Medical Society, and we're talking about heart health in conjunction with National Heart Month being this month. And there are a lot of different factors that go into being heart healthy. What are some of the most important ones?
The most important features of keeping your heart healthy, especially really before you're a patient, is to think about what you do and what you eat. Mm-hmm. These are things that we make choices about every day and sometimes don't really connect them to our health. One of the things I really love for people to think about as the idea of heart disease and aging comes up is what are the things that you can easily change about your diet or your activity pattern to really improve your chances of living a life without a heart attack.
So what are some of the best things that we can eat, or one of the worst things that we can eat, I guess, equally important question.
Right. So I really think that the elimination of processed foods and really going back to foods as they come out of the ground is a really important thing. I tell my patients, if it's in plastic, don't eat it. Mm-hmm. And I think those things with long shelf lives are things that we often grab for. And part of that pattern of being shelf stable often means it has high fat, high sodium, things that we know that are not good for us. And there's a lot of data now coming out about at least part-time vegetarianism as being an option for us all.
I was going to say, you mentioned things coming out of the ground. I was going to say, yeah.
Right. So I proudly am a part-time vegetarian, and I tell folks, you know, it's okay to have meat occasionally, but I think that the more we focus on the plant-based diet, the healthier we will all be.
What about lifestyle?
So I think the things that people think about, I know everyone has an idea about that 10,000 steps as mm-hmm. an activity level, but I think we've actually broken the rules and we actually use that as well as our exercise. So I tell my patients that you need both activity and exercise, and hold your ears, here's the bad news. Those 10,000 steps actually aren't about exercise. That's just your activity level.
Right.
So literally about 1% of Americans are getting the recommended amount of activity and exercise. So we should be doing about 2.5 hours of medium intensity exercise every week and also walking those 10,000 steps.
So what is medium intensity exercise?
I tell my patients the best way to think about medium intensity exercise is exercise where you could talk but would choose not to. So
okay.
Something where you're pushing yourself a
little
bit. I
know some people, that's literally everything that they do on a given day.
Absolutely true. And I think if that's the case for you, then you have a great opportunity just to increase your walking and start to build that stamina. I do think in our country where we like immediate satisfaction, we aren't patient enough with ourselves as we train into activity. So initially when you start back exercising, it will be uncomfortable. That doesn't have to be an alarm symptom, but just, you know, keep with a consistent exercise. Maybe only change the amount of exercise you're doing every couple of weeks until you get used to it. And it seems a lot less scary. I know couch to 5K is kind of a buzzword people like, but our bodies really take a little bit longer to train. So we should really be thinking about a longer-term plan to ramp up our exercise to get where we are comfortable doing more activity and aren't as breathless.
How important is your stress level, your blood pressure level?
Right. So often people equate stress and blood pressure. And interestingly enough, acutely, like reactively, when we're upset, certainly that can increase our blood pressure. There are a lot of other things that probably are more important for blood pressure control than stress. Mm-hmm. But we do know that mind management, really having a way to reset psychologically from your day, actually improves life quality, but also longevity. So a lot of folks who age really well have developed a strategy of managing stress, of putting some distance between their mind and the stress. And for our patients, probably a little bit between their heart and their stress as well. And I recommend a small amount of meditation. There's some great apps out there that I recommend for my patients just to try 5 minutes of meditation a day or 5 minutes of downtime in our busy connected world. I think that makes a big difference. It also just helps you check in with yourself.
Does it help to download an extra app to disconnect from our connected world?
Well, it speaks to where we are, right?
Yeah,
I think that's exactly right. I read about a recent study where patients who initially were asked if they would allow themselves to be shocked as part of an experiment said absolutely not. They actually agreed that they would pay not to be shocked. And then those same people were put in a room for 15 minutes with nothing to do. Hmm. And interestingly enough, somewhere in the order of 70% of the men and about 30% of the women, by the end of the boring 15 minutes, had self-shocked for free. just as something to do that was available in the room because of boredom. So I think our inability to sit with our own minds really is part of the era that we're living
in.
So I do kind of match my patients' lifestyles by recommending an app for checking out from life.
Although now I'm thinking like what I would do if I were in that room and there was only one thing in the room. It's almost curiosity that would get the better of me, but I don't know how long I would last. That's interesting. So the other really significant sort of lifestyle thing when it comes to heart health is getting enough sleep, right?
Yes. So the quality of our sleep and the intensity of our day really does matter. So I think a lot of times people are, because of not stress managing, are going to bed with a lot of things on their mind. I often see people putting their phone by their bed. They'll actually be checking their phone throughout the night. I think sleep as a health measure is really underestimated. Mm-hmm. So there are diseases like sleep apnea, but even just the quality of the sleep that we get, being sure that we have uninterrupted sleep and really having, like I said, that dedicated time to receive. And for everyone, it's a little different, but you know, somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep is the goal.
Speaking with Dr. Rachel Kiever, Durham, Orange County Medical Society, and we're talking about the different things that we can do to stay heart healthy, but some people will have heart issues. What are some of the warning signs? What should we be watching for?
Right. I think the inability to do a physical activity that was normally comfortable for you. So I think that something that changes your physical stamina, while that can change over time, we don't age that quickly. So if you can walk to a mailbox up a hill every day for 15 years, and all of a sudden one day that activity makes you uncomfortable, that's a red alert symptom. So I tell folks, chest discomfort, things that are making you uncomfortable with your breathing with activity, a sense of your heart racing, dizziness or sweating, these are all symptoms that should be investigated. And if they're severe, they should be investigated immediately.
Yeah, especially if it's a change from,
Absolutely. And that piece of us not sitting with ourselves or being able to check in with ourselves is part of what actually distracts people from getting those warning signs. So a lot of times we're busy. Oh, I'll deal with that another time. I felt my heart race, but I didn't pay much attention. Mm-hmm. I think that just being self-aware and knowing that you might have a change in your own health requires that you listen.
Is there a difference here between men and women?
I think so. I think women are more likely to report symptoms. Women also tend to get more atypical symptoms. And I think that's one of the things that has become sort of a success of the American Heart Association's February Heart Month, is that we're actually able to go out, and I certainly as a female cardiologist go out every February and talk to groups of women about the symptoms they should be on guard for. But really being active allows you to kind of do a stress test each day to know what your normal activity pattern response is, and often can find heart disease sooner if you have a change in that pattern of activity.
Yeah, and certainly being aware of it, and then if you notice any changes, being willing to have that conversation with your doctor, right?
Absolutely. Denial is pretty strong sometimes, and I think that piece of it is really part of the psychology of educating people every February, letting them know that there are amazing treatments available for heart disease, getting in and getting care, especially acutely. If you have chest discomfort, even if it's not severe, it doesn't mean the problem couldn't be severe. So I tell folks, chest pain with dizziness, shortness of breath, sweating, heart racing, that's a time that you need to stop what you're doing and get in and get evaluated.
Yeah. Speaking with Dr. Rachel Kiever, talking about National Heart Month and heart healthiness. National Heart Month is February. People want to know more. What are some good resources that they can check out?
Absolutely. The American Heart Association has a great website, and they actually have a new app that they're rolling out this year called My Cardiac Coach.
This is another app.
Yes. And so, but I tell folks, I'm going to meet you where you are on your phone and let you know that if you've had a heart attack, there's actually a program available through this app, and as well as with your local hospital systems, a rehabilitation program. So for folks who had heart disease events, there are a lot of great resources to help you recover your stamina and exercise capacity and get back to living a full life.
And you did mention the mindfulness apps, the meditation apps. What are some of those that people can check out?
Right. So I actually enjoy the 10% Happier app. It has a little bit of education paired with a meditative exercise, and there are a lot of those programs that are available for free. So that's also key. We don't need to spend more money. In this country, I think we spend about $80 billion a year on exercise diet programs, and the average American's gaining 3 pounds a year.
Wow.
So that money's not going to the right places. So a lot of the things that can make us heart healthier are truly free.
Speaking with Dr. Rachel Kiever, and as we wrap up this conversation, number one, first and foremost piece of advice that you can give to people to start the process of being heart healthier.
have an annual check with your doctor. Make sure that you understand your medical risks, not just your family history, but your blood pressure, your sugar control. Do you have diabetes or pre-diabetes? Making sure that we know your cholesterol numbers. That's the first check of your heart.
So again, Rachel Kiever, adult cardiologist with the Carolina Complete Health Network in Durham, on the Durham Orange County Medical Society, and also on the board of directors of the North Carolina Medical Society as well. Dr. Kiever, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.